This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. If you're like me, you're always looking for a great plant to introduce to your garden. Well, today we're going to hear about some winners of the Green Thumb Award. That's an annual competition that recognizes outstanding and innovative new plants and garden products. And with us to tell you about them is Diane Blazek. She's Executive Director of All America Selections and National Garden Bureau. Do you have a favorite plant variety that you just love to use? Well, we want to hear about it. Or maybe you have questions about previous winners. We'd like to hear from you, so give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hi, Diana. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you
for having me. I said Diana, and it's Diane.
Well, that's true, but you know, I can be called either one. I will answer.
Well, I appreciate that. So, first off, tell us about the two organizations that you're associated with. Let's talk with the National Garden Bureau first.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's a good choice. It's the older organization. We were founded in 1920, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. We just celebrated our 100th anniversary back during COVID year, so unfortunately we weren't able to party or celebrate as much as we wanted, but we're still going strong. It was founded by a gentleman who was a journalist, and he decided the general public needed more and better gardening information. And so that's how it was started, by this gentleman who actually was also involved in the creation of the Victory Gardens. He was very instrumental in that in World War I, but even more so in World War II. And he wrote the original Victory Garden book that was published in 1942.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I did not realize that. So then how did the All-American Selections come along?
So that's interesting also. There was a gentleman from the South. There was something back then called the Southern Seedsmen Association, and his idea was to create a neutral nonprofit organization that would trial new varieties that are coming to the market. And I like to call him a doubting Thomas, because he just wanted to prove that these claims that they were making, you know, this was hybridizing was really coming to be in between the two world wars. So he founded this nonprofit in 1932. And the whole basis is trialing new varieties to see if they're better than something that is already on the market.
Right. I mean, that's important for everybody, businesses as well as the, you know, our personal gardens.
Exactly. Yeah, you want something that is going to thrive and survive, you know, not fail or not be not as good as something else that you've used. So, yeah, that's the whole premise behind the AAS trials.
Sure. And I think we've all seen those old seed catalogs where they've got these humongous tomatoes. And I know my grandfather used to fall for those every year. Couldn't figure out why the tomatoes didn't get big. Right, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Well, the main reason that we wanted to talk with you today is to take a look at the 2025 Green Thumb winners. Tell us about that distinction. How do these varieties get nominated?
So this is something that is newer for us. We've been doing it for 3 years, and then it was around about a decade before with another organization. And so the concept here is not that they're actually trialed in ground, but that they are evaluated by a panel of horticulturists and separately by home gardeners on whether or not they're innovative, you know. Is it just another red petunia, or is it something really cool, a new color or a new feature or a new use or something like that? So that's what the Green Thumb Award is. And we have two divisions. Like I said, the Professional's Choice are voted on by our members. And then the People's Choice, we put it out on social media, and we just ask for the public to vote on it.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool. Which social media platforms are you using for that?
All of them.
You have to kind of do that, don't you?
Yeah. Facebook and Instagram are probably the ones we use primarily. The one that I would say we have the biggest following on, though, is Pinterest, because Pinterest is all about inspiration, you know?
Oh, yes.
So Yeah.
Yes, I'm addicted to that. So many boards, so many things I'll never get to. Right,
right.
So when people just say like, oh, well, I used this or I grew this and it was great. Is that how that works?
No, because these are newer varieties. They probably haven't even made it to the local garden center yet. They're all part of our new varieties and new garden products program. So they have to be new, but yet available to consumers this year. So for instance, you know, if you wanted to go to your local garden center, if that garden center chooses to carry this, they would be available this year. So we don't want to, you know, give this Green Thumb Award too early before it's available, and we don't want to do it too late once the newness wears off. So there's a fine balance.
Sure, that makes sense. But the people who, like the users, the gardeners, People's Choice Awards people, how do they know about these?
So we just put out the information through social media, give a picture, give a description. A lot of times there's a video to go along with explains what is new and different. So they are viewing, watching, listening, and then making their decision. Kind of a hard decision. Like in our annuals category, we had more than 20 different varieties.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was kind of hard for them to choose, but they did, and we ended up with our winners.
Oh, that's great, because that would explain sometimes where there's an overlap where the professionals and the people voted for the same ones.
You're right. Yes, we do have some dual winners.
Okay. Well, let's get to those categories. The first one, let's talk about the annual winners.
Okay. So for the People's Choice, the winner is a Calibrachoa. It's called Lea, capital L, capital I, capital A, Abstract Lemon Cherry. So when we were talking earlier, I said that these have to be innovative and something different. And I'll try to describe this flower because that's what's so different is the flower coloration. It's a nice lemon yellow with a cherry red coloration, and it kind of varies. In some places, it's really an intense solid color red in between every other petal that maybe is yellow. And then in some places, it's more like a paintbrush has brushed on. So that is the color combination that's unique.
It's beautiful. I'm looking at the picture right now because if you also want to follow along, you can go to NGB, which is NationalGardenBureau.org. And if you do / Green Thumb Award winners, it'll pop up and you can see that picture and a description of it. Now, what I really like is that it looks like it'll be perfect for a hanging basket or a container.
Yes, you're right. And that, in general, that's what Calibrachoas are so good for. So, yes, it's shown in a container, and I think that's where it excels.
Okay. And then let's just go to the professional annual.
Okay. Yes. The professional's choice in annuals is a Cosmos, and it's called Seashells Red. And this, again, I'm going to urge people to go to the website because it's hard to define, but these Cosmos have tubular petals. The interior of the petal is a vibrant deep pink, and then the outer is a paler pink. It's called red, but to me, it's more pink than red.
Yeah.
But it is a Cosmos, so it's very easy to grow, will do well, and it has these unique petal shapes.
It is. It's beautiful. And usually Cosmos are seeds, right? Is that how we...
Exactly.
Them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said that. The Calibrachoa comes from cuttings. Mm-hmm. So you'll find those as plants in your garden center. This Cosmos, comes as seed. So you'll be able to find it as seed, or some places might have some starts of the Cosmos.
Okay. And of course, if we do annuals, we have to do the perennials. And what do we have for our People's Choice?
So for the People's Choice, it's a Buddleia. So it's a butterfly bush. And this one is called Little Rockstars Red. And what is so unique about this one is how small it is. So maybe you don't want to put it in ground. Maybe you're concerned about the invasiveness. You know, there's a couple states that have it on their watch list.
Oh, I did not realize that. And really, it is red, but it's called red, but it's really... purple, right?
I think it's a purpley red. Yes.
Who's naming these, Diane? I'm wondering.
Names, but, you know, you go with the creative aspect.
Right, I guess. So, but if anybody's ever had like a butterfly bush, in many cases, they flap. And so this one doesn't look like it will.
Exactly, because it's so compact and it's very highly branching. So it's got more branches, but yet it's not going to put on these huge flower heads that will cause it to flop over.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Do you know how tall it gets? Because it didn't have it under description that I'm looking
at. It's less than 2 feet tall.
Oh, yeah, perfect. So again, so great
very
for
compact,
small pot.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. And then with the professionals?
So this one, I love this. You know, I don't think hellebores get enough attention in the garden.
Agreed.
Or in the garden center or in the media. So hellebores are really cool. They're one of the first things that are going to bloom in the spring. This one is called JWLS Endless. Now, JWLS is just a series name. So the main thing you want to know is endless. And to describe it, it is white. You know, a lot of them have kind of these purple or rose-colored colorations. So this one's all white with a little hint, tinge of green. But what's really cool is that it's going to bloom longer, and those flower heads will be a little bit more upright. You know, the famous
yes.
thing about hellebores is how you put the mirror under because
yes.
they droop. They look down instead of up. So this one will be a little bit more upward facing and will bloom for a longer time.
And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we don't give as much love to hellebores as we should, is that they just aren't as showy because the flowers are facing down.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now try the new endless and you'll get a little bit of a variation there.
Yeah, try a hellebore. Now, I don't usually see those in the gardens places, the greenhouses, big box stores for sure. Do you think that's because they are such an early bloomer that by the time they would be out in the garden center, they're almost done?
I think so. I think, you know, overall gardening is kind of a short time frame in a lot of people's mind. You can do stuff year round. You can do early spring, you can do late fall, but until you have more experience, I think you don't realize, oh my goodness, yes, I could have this early spring garden, I could have a spring garden, I can have a summer garden, I can have a late summer garden. There's different things that bloom throughout that time, you know, especially when it comes to perennials or blooming shrubs.
Right.
An annual, yeah, you'll get out there after your last frost date and you'll plant them and they'll last until the first frost. But that's the same old, and that's wonderful. But for some variety, try some perennials that are going to bloom at different times.
Yes, yes. And especially in the spring, because there's nothing like that first bloom to know that spring is coming, no matter what the weather is like.
That puts a smile on your face, right?
For sure. We're talking to Diane Blazek. She is Executive Director of All America Selections and the National Garden Bureau. Do you have any questions for us? Join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email, talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Make sure that you stay with us because coming up at 2:15, our friend Joel Karsten, the father of straw bale gardening, is going to be back with us. And that's always fun to talk to him. Right now, of course, we are talking about the Green Thumb Award winners. And Diane, I think we're probably up to what, edibles at this point? What was the people's choice?
Yeah. So there's two different ones, the People's Choice one and then the Professional's Choice. And they're not the same one, which we'll get to one or two here.
Right, yeah.
One on both sides. But here's what's interesting. The People's Choice one is Broccoli Purple Magic, and it is also an AAS winner. So it won through our trials, and the reason it won the Green Thumb Award is the unique purple coloration. So quite often a purple broccoli will either have purple heads and a green stem or green heads and a purple stem. Well, this one has both. It has the purple heads and purple stem.
Finally did it. You got both.
Right, right. Yes, exactly. And what's really cool is with a lot of purple vegetables, if you just lightly steam them, they'll keep that purple coloration. If you boil them like crazy, well, then, yeah, the purple
goes
coloring
away.
Is gonna,
yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's so disappointing. I think we've all done that. We've bought that wonderful colored cauliflower, whatever, and then you cook it and it's gone.
So, right, right.
Yeah, but this is a gorgeous, really, really pretty. It's so pretty, it could almost be a flower, seriously. Very
yes,
nice.
You could use it as a centerpiece before, you know,
yeah.
I've seen that done where
yep.
people make cut flower arrangements with it. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Absolutely. So what is the taste? Have you been able to taste it? Is it better than?
I have not been able to taste it. I want to grow it this year. But what the judges were saying with All America Selections is that it was really an amazing, good broccoli taste. No bitterness to it. It was sweet. The stems weren't woody or stalky or anything. So it sounds like overall they really kept taste as part of it while they were breeding in the purple coloration.
Great. And what did the professionals have to say? What was their favorite?
So they chose a basil, and this one is called Everleaf Lemon. There is a series called Everleaf, which are powdery mildew resistant. And what I think is really cool about this one, just me personally, when I make pesto with my Genovese basil, I always add a touch of lemon juice for that light, fresh flavor. Well, this one has it built in. So
nice.
I have grown this one, and I used maybe 25-30% of these lemon basil leaves with my regular Genovese, and then I didn't have to add any lemon juice. But that's the whole idea, is the flavor behind it. And then this Everleaf series, the plants don't get leggy. They've got short internodes, you know, between each leaf stem.
Mm-hmm.
It's shorter, and so it puts out a massive number of leaves, so it makes harvest super easy and very productive.
And it looks like it's beautiful, so it would almost make a great, like, under bigger plants kind of a thing. It's really pretty. I'd like to grow this myself. Is that going to be readily available for us, or do we have to go to
yes,
a special?
It
will be. Okay.
No, I think if you go online and just search for seeds, you will be able to find them available.
Okay, wonderful. Look forward to that. Chris emailed us to thank us for mentioning the butterfly bush and the hellebore, but he's wondering whether or either of these are for zone 4, because he lives in... He or she, sorry, Chris, live in northern Grant County along the Wisconsin River, and they're in a solid zone 4. Now, from what I see on here, yeah, it's 5 to 9, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it is. The hellebore, both of them are 5 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing I would recommend is if you're daring and you want to kind of push it, you could try it maybe on the south side right next to a building, give it some winter protection, or we talked about that buddleia. You could grow in containers, pull it into your garage, and if your garage is a little bit more protected or semi-heated or something, you might be able to overwinter, but you'd be taking a chance.
Yeah, and always. And, well, things are changing, so maybe in a few years it'll be a little bit warmer up there, Chris. Thanks,
yeah,
thanks
well,
so
we
much
hope
for
not, but
yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. You just don't know these days. So
right.
Let's see. So which other category we need to talk about? Houseplants.
I think we should talk about shrubs and houseplants.
Oh, shrubs, yeah,
right.
Okay. Whichever one you want to try first, go ahead.
Okay, well, you mentioned houseplants, and this one was a winner in both categories, so that's fun. It's called Philodendron Prismacolor Orange You Gorgeous. Sounds like a knock-knock joke, right?
It does.
Yeah.
It's
and
a beauty.
It is. It's that orange coloration, a rusty orange rosy coloration, the veins in the middle of the leaves, and then a little bit on the outer margins as well. So it's a typical philodendron. It's very variegated. I want to say that.
Yes.
It's not a solid color green. So it has the kind of a lemon yellow, a lemon green, and then a nice chartreuse green with some of the orange veining in it. They call it mottled.
Yes, and that's a perfect description. But I can see how this would really brighten up a space, and such a contrast to our normal green of a houseplant.
Right. And in January, you know, it's kind of gray in January. Yeah, so bring that in, and you're right, it would brighten everything up.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And like you said, this was for both professional and for the people's choice. Now, with shrubs, you got two different ones on that one, right?
Yes, we do. So the people's choice, no surprises, a hydrangea. I'm telling you, hydrangea is the number one thing for us when we are doing blogs and webinars. But this one, this is probably really good news for Chris. It's Hardy to Zones 3. It comes from a breeder in Minnesota, so I know that they breed for hardiness. It's called Flowerful Smooth. So it's a smooth hydrangea, and it has bold white blooms. It is just covered. So the whole thing here is more blooms and nice white bloom heads.
And it says it's disease resistant and low maintenance, which is always nice. And it's only 3 to 4 feet tall, so it's fairly compact for a hydrangea.
Exactly. Yeah, you could plant a whole row of them at that size. So it would make a nice addition to the yard.
It has been amazing over the last few years, all the different varieties of hydrangeas that are out there and how people are really loving them.
You are so right. And like I said, if we do a webinar, it's always our most attended or highest viewed webinar, our blogs, it gets more comments. So people just love their hydrangeas. They are in the limelight right now.
Yes, they are. And Little Limelight is a very good variety too.
I was going to say, I said that and I was like, that's another good variety.
Yes, it is. So let's go on to the professionals. What did they come up with?
Okay, so the professionals were looking at this one, and it's a burning bush, Eunomus, and it's called Fireball Seedless. So it is the only seedless, sterile, invasive burning bush currently on the market. So, we kind of talked about that with Buddleia, and the breeders are very aware. There are some places where it's important that you know. And so this one is Hardy Zones 4 through 8, has all the great color, all the same durability, but it is sterile and non-invasive.
And that is music to a lot of people's ears here in Wisconsin, because I believe that is on the invasive list. And we can have that beautiful plant and that beautiful color without having to worry about it invading our forest. That is really good news.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, one of the last category, which I was surprised to even see, is garden products. Why did you decide that this was a good category?
Well, there's a lot of new products that are being designed to make our lives easier as gardeners. So we're always looking for something where it was created and it solves a problem. And this one's kind of twofold. If you've heard of Crescent, they make a lot of self-watering containers. So that has me sold. I don't have to worry about
yes.
it. I just fill the reservoir and it does the work for me. Then the other thing about this one is it is created from a product that is keeping things out of the landfill. So it's upcycled from landfill waste. So that's got to feel good for all of us. Less going into the landfill. We're using a recycled product. And then they also are self-watering. So the name of this collection is called Crescent 2, T-O-O, Circular Positive Planter Collection. So it's circular, meaning doesn't go in the land waste, it comes back out, and it's all positive.
And it's very nice to look at.
The
design is really sleek, but there's also a traditional version of it that's a little bit more like a clay pot, but in these, and does it come in colors, I would assume?
I think they do. When they first came out, they had one color, and I'm thinking there are 3 or 4 colors.
Okay.
I'd have to check on that for you, but typically they do bring things out in multiple colors.
Sure, sure. And this one that I'm looking at is sort of a gray, which goes with pretty much everything, I guess. So,
that's great. And it makes the colors pop. Then.
Yes,
you know,
for
when
sure.
you have a very neutral container, it doesn't try to
fight.
Take over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, earlier you had talked about with the purple broccoli that it was an AAS winner. Can you explain what that means and how it's different from the Green Thumb Award winners?
Yeah, so AAS winners, the breeders are coming out, you know, with new varieties all the time, and they want to enter it into our trials. So these literally, we get the seed here in our office, we get comparison varieties, and we send them out to a network of more than 80 judges across the U.S. We have 7 different trials. You know, we have edibles, we have annuals, we have perennials, et cetera. And so our judges then grow this entry side by side with something that's already on the market. And what they're doing is they're saying, okay, well, and let's just take this broccoli, for example. We're growing it next to this. How is it for taste? How is it for productivity? How is it for disease resistance? And, you know, is the purple good? Does it have purple on the head and the stem? So our judges look at that. They submit their ratings, their scores through an app on their phone, and then we do the mathematical. Well, we don't do it. It's all automated. and this mathematical equation determines whether or not it's an AAS winner. If it scores high enough, then the breeder tells us if they have enough seed. And if they do, then we announce it as an AAS winner. And we usually have anywhere from, 15 to 25 winners every year that we announce, and then we market them.
Oh, that's amazing. So then there's a list somewhere that people can take, you know, look at and say, where can I find these, or this would work great for me?
Yes. AASwinners.com. And so then when you go there, you just search by AAS winners. You can search by year, or you can go in and say, I want to find all Celosia, and you can search by Celosia. Then when you look at each individual winner page, if it's been on the market long enough, you know, we will list companies like Park Seed or Seeds and Such or Jung Seed. They're a wonderful supporter of All America Selections. And we'll provide some links to their websites where you can actually purchase them.
Oh, perfect. So that's easy enough to do. Wonderful. Now let's go back to the National Garden Bureau. There's always a proclamation of this is the year of the caladium, apparently, is one of them. How does that get selected?
Oh, this one is super interesting. Now, we've been doing this for over 45 years, and this is something, again, that our members determine. You know, we look at these different plant genera, and we say, well, which one is popular? You know, when cauliflower came about a couple years ago, where it was just like there were cauliflower shortages and cauliflower pizza crust and buffalo, you know.
Yes.
So what we did was we said, well, it's going to be the year of the brassica that year because it was so popular. So we look at popularity. We look at things that are easy to grow relatively. We look and see, has there been some new breeding work? You know, we were just talking about Buddleia and that burning bush. So last year it was the year of the Buddleia. We've got burning bush on our plans for the future. So we want new work being done. We want it easy to grow. We want it applicable to a lot of people. You know, perennials are a little bit more regional specific, but we try to make them as inclusive as we can. And we have 6 different categories. So we have an annual, a perennial, a flowering shrub, a bulb crop, an edible, and a houseplant. So those are the 6 things we focus on every year.
Okay. Well, let's go over them real quick. We have time.
Okay. So our perennial is the Asclepias, the butterfly weed, I guess. I hate to call it that,
but it is
the Asclepias. And the reason we chose that is the huge interest in monarch butterflies. So we want to tell people more about the different Asclepias that are available. Then you had mentioned the caladium. So our bulb crop is the caladium. And there's a huge interest right now in foliage. You know, just growing for foliage.
Yes.
And then we also noticed a year or so ago, a huge interest in shade gardening. And so we were like, well, that kind of fits both. So we've got the year of the caladium, and those are wonderful. And then our annual is a calendula. And a lot of people are growing their own cut flowers. They want to bring them in. And there has been a surge in small flower growers, flower farmers, you know, that are growing for farmers markets or wedding florists. So calendula fits that. Our flowering shrub is the dogwood. And until I read this article, I was like, wow, I didn't know that much about dogwoods. You've got trees, but you also have the shrubs. So we're focusing more on the shrub for that, the smaller trees. For houseplant, it's the year of the Monstera. And again, this one, it kind of went haywire during COVID, and these Monstera were selling for thousands of dollars. And it's been interesting. There's been a lot of growers that are now making the Monstera more readily available at a more affordable price. So we wanted to tell people about Monstera. We had a webinar about it a couple weeks ago. It was probably one of the most entertaining webinars I've ever done and very informative. And then last but not least is the year of the pea. So grow some peas, grow snap peas, grow shelling peas. It's interesting that we have a European counterpart. They are also promoting 2025 as the year of the pea. So,
well, who knew?
Exactly,
that's
right. The
exciting.
Popular pea.
Popular pea. Absolutely. Yeah. Long as they're not mushy, I'm there.
Right.
So how are those chosen? Just a collective of people who know what they're doing?
Yes, and it is our members. So we try not to duplicate things too frequently. We say it has to be at least a decade. You know, it was 14 years ago we did the Year of the Tomato, and everybody loves tomatoes, so
sure.
Everybody's clamoring for us to do it again because there continues to be additional breeding work. So it is by our members' choice. So they're the ones that vote on this. We've got this little internal voting mechanism we use. But we're thinking about maybe in the next year or so, we're going to try to get the home gardener involved. We're going to say, hey, which one of these bulb crops would you like to learn more about?
Yeah.
And we'll see what their feedback is.
Yeah, so I bet you'll get a lot.
I think we will, too.
Yeah.
I guarantee you the flowering shrub will be hydrangea, but we've already done that. We need to give love to the other flowering shrub.
There you go. So your members for the National Garden Bureau are professional growers. Is that who the members are?
They are professionals on the commercial side. So they're breeders, they're brokers, distributors, they are the retailers, they're the growers. And then we have another separate category, which I think is very interesting for everybody, like book authors or podcast hosts. So we are able to, you know, give them some publicity and send some people to their websites because we know our members are the experts in their field. You know, they're on the professional side, and then they're on this outreach communication media side. So they have some wonderful books and podcasts and online courses. So, yeah, we have about, it's almost 200 members now that come from the horticulture industry.
Oh, that's great. And there's a lot of information on your website. So tell us about what people can find there.
Well, it's funny you say that because I literally hopped off a call with our web designer to get on this call, and she's like, your website's so huge. It's so many megabytes or gigabytes, I guess it was. So, yes, there is a lot of information. You had given the address, ngb.org. One of the things we didn't even really talk about, which is our new plants program, and I said hydrangeas was one of our most popular webinars, but our even most popular is the one where I, for an hour, talk about 180 different new varieties.
Oh,
the
my.
Green thumbs are subsets of those.
Okay.
But, yeah, we have 180 new varieties, pretty much that number every year, and it's under the new plants program. These come direct from the breeders, and they are just now hitting the market. So if you want to really go in there and salivate over all these new tomatoes and petunias and shrubs and hydrangeas, that's where you would go. And that's one of our main programs.
Oh, that's wonderful. You really get psyched about spring,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When you get are exposed to that. Now, you have a newsletter, too. Does that go out to just anybody or is that just to your members?
No, that's really it's on behalf of our members. So usually what we're doing is sending information out to home gardeners about our products or giving them tips or giving them summaries of our webinars. So we have a blog, and then that blog gets turned into our newsletter, and we send it out pretty much every Friday January through May. And then, like I said, it's a seasonal thing. So as people are out in their garden, they're not opening newsletters.
Right.
So we back off a little bit in the summer. And then by the time it gets to like November, I think we only do one a month. Just, you know, people are thinking about the holidays and not about their garden.
Right, right. Sometimes that happens with us with callers because people are out in their gardens. They're listening, but they're... You're gardening. They're not calling in with their questions. So understandable.
Right, right.
Understandable. Excuse me. Now, I noticed that you have a section on your front page about grants that you give to therapeutic gardens. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, now you're tugging at the heartstrings. This is a wonderful program we started about 10 years ago, and it's our way of giving back to something that's related to everything else we do. And so therapeutic gardens, again, they were started years ago, and they kind of waned, and then they got a resurgence around the Vietnam War, and then they waned, and they've gotten a big resurgence again. In fact, you know, I'm looking at exactly what you are on our website, and it is amazing how the hobby of gardening can help people with mental and physical disabilities. It can be used as therapy. It can just be used to teach social skills and everything. So, yeah, we give away $7,500 every year to five different gardens, and it's based on how many votes they get once we put it out on our website and we start to tell their stories. But this is something we are very proud of and will continue for the foreseeable future of giving back to these gardens so they can use the hobby of gardening or the profession of gardening to help those in need.
And I shout out to the Edgerton Hospital Garden. I think it was a 2023 winner.
Yes.
Mark Dwyer, who is the director down there, has been with us for years. And so we've been hearing about that garden for a while, and it was really wonderful when they won that award. So they do great things that those therapeutic gardens. It's like you said, it's amazing what gardening can do for you.
It does, yeah, both physically and mentally. And you're right, I've toured Mark's garden, I think it was last summer, and they have done so much with that space, and the fact that they make it available to the public as well as to their patients and everything, it's a great program.
It really is. And we want to thank you for your leadership on some really great programs too, Diane. Thank you for being with us, and I'm sure we'll do this again.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye. We were talking to Diane Blazek. She's Executive Director of All America Selections and National Garden Bureau. But stay with us because Joel Carson's back with us, and he's going to be talking about straw bale gardening.